The McIlvaney Weekly Commentary, covering monetary, economic, and geopolitical news events.
I think when you look at the CNN Grid Fear Index, it's in the fear category. It's not an extreme level. I don't know. We could be putting in a market top. We have rotation of the MAG 7, recently referred to as the LAG 7. And that's been going on for months. Now we have a rotation out of semiconductors. Is this indicator suggesting that we're starting a decline, but the worst is yet ahead? Again, where we get to extreme fear on the indicator. Extreme fear is not in the gauge yet.
Now here are Kevin Orrick and David McIlvaney.
Welcome to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney. Well, last week, Dave, you had your client call with the MWM clients, and I know a lot of them are coming in next month personally to see you. Isn't it great, the team that you have and the clients that we have? What a blessing.
I must say, I think it's extraordinary. The team that I get to work with, Ted and Robert, Philip Wortman, Morgan Lewis, I appreciate their integrity, hard work, intellectual curiosity, and the chemistry on the team is a lot of fun. So while we're putting these quarterly calls together, I'm usually aware of what's going to be said, but I'm always surprised at the same time. And I learn from these guys, which I love.
Yeah,
I've got a lot of respect for them, and I'm blessed to work with that extraordinary
team.
Isn't
it amazing that guys that are working for you and you're taking notes while they're talking?
Well, I'm equally blessed on the precious metal side of the business. The people are amazing. Kevin, come on. Our friendship has grown over a 30-year stretch. And, you know, our advisor team is filled with talented people. Our staff is off the charts. We've added 6 people to the team in the last several months. And I'm amazed by the caliber.
Right.
Smart, hardworking, self-motivated, innovative. I mean, these are really great people. It's an inspiring group to be a part of.
You know what's also amazing, though, Dave? We have these teams because we have amazing clients.
Yeah, to get to work with an amazing group of clients as well. As I get on calls with clients throughout the week, I realize that we have this relational nexus, which is unreal. I'm naturally curious and love to learn. But add to that the motivation to serve our clients well, provide insight, guidance. I understand a lot of people wear themselves out during a career.
Right.
And daily, I'm inspired by the work and I'm inspired by the people.
You know, you're talking about wearing yourself out. And, you know, I still talk to Jim Deeds, who's in his 90s. And I think he wishes that he still was here, Dave. And I talk to other guys who were like, well, it's maybe retirement age. And then they question themselves. And I look at my weekend. Okay, I took Friday off and I was off Monday. I'm telling you what, I was ready to come back to work. You're talking about you're inspired. I love a little bit of time off. I don't like a lot of time off. And it's mainly because of the people we work with and for.
So it's not too much time, too many honeydews. I mean, it was Labor Day after all.
It was. Okay. Well, you caught me there. But yeah, I think I'd rather be calling my clients than fixing the refrigerator.
You know, how'd that work for you?
I got it fixed.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
2 screws. That was all it took. So, yeah.
I have these miniature hero moments where I fix something and Mary Catherine didn't think I was capable of such a feat. I probably played up what the feat is.
Right.
And it is 2 screws. And,
yeah.
You know, but it was portrayed as an engineering
right
masterpiece.
And you have to go find one of them and get the size exactly right. You know, you have to act like it's complex, a little bit like the financial markets. The financial markets are complex.
Well, they are complex.
Yeah,
there's no pretending there.
Yeah.
There's so much complexity in the financial markets. It's rare that you study all the factors in play and feel like you fully get it. And reflecting on a test I took when I was 25, the Johnson O'Connor. Have we ever talked about
That's a personality
aptitude test. Yeah, it's
okay.
Not personality, aptitude. Like, what are you good at? What are you not good at? What is going to take more energy for you to do?
So repairing refrigerators with 2 small screws was not part of that?
No, not really. What it did show me is that I thrive with an investigative, multidisciplinary synthesis of ideas leading to a defined course of action.
Okay.
So, you know, diagnosis, prescription. I mean, it's a combination of deep dive analysis with practical, actionable outcomes.
Isn't
and that's
that
my daily job.
That's what you get to do.
Yeah. It is amazing. Markets are rewarding. But again, the relational depth is even more so.
Okay, so let's do this today, because a lot of times I hear our clients ask you, Dave, what is it that you look for? What are some of the themes that you look for when you do some of that market analysis? So why don't we go through some of that right now and make it current?
Themes today: financial conditions, sentiment,
yeah,
and a few curious shifts in the bond and precious metals markets.
Okay.
So starting with financial conditions, the Chicago Fed publishes an index that measures money markets, bonds, stocks, shadow banking, suggestive of how tight or loose financial conditions are.
Are we loose or tight right now financially?
And it's called the Financial Conditions Index. Hmm. Lo and behold, we have not been this loose since July 2021 during the meme stock melt-up, the everything bubble. So financial conditions are incredibly loose. Hmm. And prior to 2021, you'd have to go back to the first quarter of 2014. This was several years after the European debt crisis. I wouldn't say it was resolved, but you got to sort of paper over it with Mario Draghi's "we'll do whatever it takes" as he normalized yields and promised to use the full power of the European Central Bank to make sure that yields return to
normal. And it was like a tidal wave of debt and later inflation.
Yeah. But yeah, financial conditions are loose today. And when conditions are loose, confidence is high.
Yeah.
Investors are comfortable with risk. They're aggressively investing. They're speculating for growth. Now, you can flip the script when conditions tighten and risk comes out of the market. Then you've got caution, which is pervasive, and you've got the mood of the market, which sours.
So they measure mood, though, don't they? I mean, the sentiment index is a mood measurement device.
Yeah, there's various measures of sentiment. I was comparing the index, this is the financial conditions index, I was comparing that against the consumer sentiment numbers this week, so the University of Michigan numbers. Some interesting relationships were observable. Normally, financial conditions lead and consumer sentiment shifts on a lagging basis.
Okay.
Consumer sentiment is more reflective of economic concerns. So, you know, when you think about gasoline and food prices and inflation expectations, real wage growth, employment perceptions, fear of getting the pink slip, housing affordability or lack thereof. 30-year fixed is at 6.71 this week.
So what you're talking about is the day-to-day grind, the day-to-day life. That's what usually affects the mood.
These are the things that get factored in, more economic related, into the UMISH number. This is what impacts people's feelings.
Right.
About the economy. And they're very different than credit spreads and other purely financial market metrics. But that lead lag behavior is typical. We don't have that right now. So that was one of the key observations. I'm looking at both of these charts. Instead, what you see is consumer stress and concern, while financial market largesse is still significant and ramping. So the University of Michigan numbers earlier this year, they hit all-time lows even while financial conditions remained super accommodative.
Hmm.
They're not at those all-time lows, but they're not far off them today. And yes, financial conditions remain super accommodative. So the University of Michigan numbers are still at levels associated with recession, and you'd normally see a very sour equity market sentiment with the UMISH numbers where they are. Hardly the case today when you're looking at risk assets.
Right.
We don't have anything circling the drain. In fact, everything's like trees growing to the stars. There's no limits. So the question on my mind, will we see the reverse lead lag this time with economic concerns bleeding back into financial market conditions and a tightening there?
Well, and so there is a disconnect with the mood, though, because with economic conditions, people right now are really feeling the pinch. Maybe their 401k or their investments are going up. But, you know, after listening to Jack Gamble last week talk to you about the AI bubble, I just wonder if that disconnect isn't part of a shell game that's going on with AI. And when that comes apart, if it comes apart, it probably has to, that's probably going to change. The financial conditions will shift to match the mood.
Yeah, the mood is strong because the narrative is strong.
Yeah.
And so if people understand that it is more of a shell game and not something that is a layup, a guarantee, then yeah, you could definitely see sentiment shift and with it, mood of the market. But again, I'm wondering if you're not dealing with consumers who are so pinched at this point that it begins to have sort of a negative feedback loop into the financial markets, regardless of the AI stuff. So we did take a deep dive down the AI rabbit hole in part to look at the narrative driving so much of the current financial market enthusiasm. Right. But growth in portfolio values on the back of equity outperformance, rampant debt expansion, you know, modest premiums paid today in the marketplace for lower quality fixed income credit, all of that is at odds with the consumer's perception, the present economic reality, and what they anticipate in the near term. Because University of Michigan has sort of an immediate sense, what's your view here? And on the horizon, what's your view out there? And they have two different measures. Both of those, the consumer's not happy. And the one dominant factor in the UMich numbers that stands out, not a surprise, inflation.
Right. The price inflation. You pay at the store.
High prices are creating pressure for household finances. So people feel one way about their budgets, right? This negative feelings. And they presently feel very differently about their portfolios. Positive feelings, at least those who have portfolios to speak of.
Right. And so if you don't have a portfolio, you're just feeling recession right now, right? But if you have a portfolio, yep. It's like, well, it's costing us a lot at the store, but look what we're making over in the stock market right now.
So sentiment is the second topic. University of Michigan captures economic sentiment reasonably well, although there is certainly some partisan bias that shows up in the sampling. And it should come as no surprise that in an election year, there are feelings and concerns which are more elevated.
Mm-hmm.
Inflation is the dominant issue discussed by the respondents. Last week, that's supported by the Institute for Supply Management Services and Manufacturing indexes, particularly their prices paid components, both stronger than expected.
So inflation in the source material.
Basically. It reinforces the fact that whether it's services or manufacturing, input costs are remaining higher than they'd like them to be. And if they were hoping for lower numbers, they did not get them. So couple that with the Cleveland Fed's interviews with local manufacturers dealing with some double-digit increases in input costs. Double-digit. And this is an area that is unambiguously negative. This won't make its way into the CPI and PPI numbers this week. So Right. We get those this week, and we'll have a catalyst for Warsh and Company to do something or not do something. But again, what's not going to get factored in addition to, I mean, we talked about ISM. We talked about consumer expectations, inflation expectations in the consumer numbers.
Right.
But the Bloomberg Agricultural Spot Index, which tracks 10 major products, in August had its biggest monthly gains in more than a decade.
Okay.
And households can tell you about that. They can tell you a lot more than statisticians can.
Yeah. And inflation is here. Now, I'm wondering, and we can go back to this, but you know, the bullishness right now in the market seems strong, but is there a way of measuring bullish and bearish, you know, just what the sentiment is there on whether the market's going to continue?
Yeah, there's a bunch of different sentiment indicators. American Association of Individual Investors, the Bull Bear Spread, National Association of Active Investment Managers, the CNN Greed Fear Index, Volatility Index, which we call VIX.
And maybe even margin debt, right?
Margin debt. They're all indicators of sentiment. So looking at the American Association of Individual Investors bull bear spread, there's only a 2 percentage point bullish bias where you can see extremes in either direction 10 to 15 points apart. So if you look at the AAII numbers, it's neutral.
It's like a room full of people that are sort of split in half right now.
Yeah. I forget what the exact number was. Maybe it's 38, 36, and 20 odd in the middle, neutral. But it doesn't tell you anything.
Well, how about margin debt then?
Well, there's actually the National Association of Active Investment Managers is a different look at margin. Not always, but it's bullish enough to be net long the markets, 102, almost 103% leveraged long position. So this is active managers who are saying, we not only want to own the markets, but we're willing
to
borrow.
To own more.
Leverage the portfolio to own more.
Well, we talked about AI again. That's happening to a massive degree in AI. So
sure.
Borrowing to buy more stock.
Yeah, so you've got the professional investors who are at 103% market exposure, 102.6. And then you've got margin debt, which is better reflection of retail investors. And it came off the June all-time highs of $1.5 trillion. And it's still near the record, $1.417 trillion.
Hmm.
For perspective, that's still 40% over last year's levels.
Wow.
So maybe it dropped 5% month over month, June to July, and we don't have the August figures yet. but it's still 40, almost 45% over last year's levels. Those levels suggest manic confidence. And of course, that's what is supporting one of the aspects of what's supporting the current equities market. So sentiment, sentiment, sentiment. We've got a neutral reading. We've got a very bullish reading in the professional asset managers being net long 103, right. 102.6. We've got the margin numbers near all-time highs.
But the economic mood is sour.
But the economic mood is sour. So that's right. That's why I'm thinking about, you know, financial conditions versus how the households are feeling. And one of the things that I think this could set up is a nasty surprise in the midterm elections where Democrats sweep, and now all of a sudden, anybody who had any thought of a strong finish to the end of the year, low taxes going forward, you might be motivated to take some of those gains near the end of the fourth quarter and pay those cap gains taxes for year 2026 versus who the hell knows what you're going to get in 2027 with a new, you know, congressional crowd.
This weekend, I was going through my pictures and I sent a picture. I went back to 2017 and sent a picture of you and your dad. After a full day of meeting with people in separate rooms, you had different clients coming in, and we were in Austin, and you guys were debriefing at the end of the day. And, you know, I think about all the things that your dad used to tell us, that like the shift from greed to fear. Do you remember the story, the way your dad told it about if you throw a bunch of Krugerrands, gold coins out in the middle of the room and say, get what you can, that's greed. Everybody just jumps on. He says, but if there was a 9-foot gorilla with a straight razor, he always said the straight razor part, you know, with a straight razor behind you, it's going to turn to fear real quick. And I've never forgotten that, because panic is an interesting, we're talking about sentiment and mood changes, and but you don't usually see gradual changes. What you see is something completely unexpected. The gorilla, the 9-foot gorilla, all of a sudden showing up, and it's like, well, maybe he was always there. You just got greedy first.
Well, and it shifts, and then you figure out why it shifted after the fact, or at least that's how the news media kind of tries to create some cause and effect to
they
better
write
understand
books
it.
Later. Yeah.
And here's what caused this. If you spend any time underwater watching fish, it's fascinating because they all move as a school. Mm. And none of the fish in the school know what's happening. They just know what's happening right next to them.
That's a great, you and I have gone diving and seen that, where all of a sudden there's just a change.
The whole school moves and they don't know why. They just know that there's movement and they have to respond.
Right.
And then after the fact, you can be like, oh, well, the tuna was getting ready to eat the one on the outer edge and he responded and it created this domino effect.
Right.
But the nature of the markets is to not know. And when sentiment shifts, you know, then you can do sort of a post-mortem and say, oh, well, this is what happened.
But right now, there's no fear in the market.
There's a little bit of fear, like if you look at the CNN Greed Fear Index.
Okay.
It was 64 a month ago. That was in the greed category. They kind of have it on a like an RPM spectrum.
Okay.
64 was in the greed category, not the extreme greed category. Today, it's at 42. So it has crept into the fear category. Nowhere near, you know, what you'd see with a market low. Market lows tap the extreme fear level. Market highs usually tap the extreme greed level. And I think with war uncertainty, there's no doubt that's a factor. We've got some concerns about the pressure from the oil markets and diesel and refined products. You know, they haven't gone away. We've got all-time highs in diesel. It's, I rode my motorcycle to work. I mean, I can afford $7 a gallon. It just makes me angry.
Right.
So I rode
that
my bike.
That is a big truck you drive when you're not, you know, on the motorcycle, though. Yeah. You could pull a lot of horses with it, Dave. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think when you look at the CNN Greed Fear Index, it's in the fear category. It's not an extreme level. I don't know. We could be putting in a market top. We have rotation of the Mag 7, recently referred to as the Lag 7.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
From mag to lag.
Yeah. And that's been going on for months. Now we have a rotation out of semiconductors. Is this indicator suggesting that we're starting a decline, but the worst is yet ahead? Again, where we get to extreme fear on the indicator. Extreme fear is not in the gauge yet.
Okay. And one of the ways that you do measure, because we were talking today about what you analyze to look at on a consistent basis, volatility is often a sign of things shifting.
Yeah.
The volatility index.
And yet you have nothing there. It's not giving you any indication. VIX is often thought of as a market sentiment gauge as well. It's a ratio between puts and calls. It's indicative of hedging market risk and anticipated future volatility in the S&P 500. Last week, we hit a multi-month low at 14. Zero
wow.
alarm bells there.
Yeah.
Quite the opposite. It's basically saying everything's good. There is nothing to worry about here. So these indicators are not consistent with the economic sentiment, right? So you've got financial market
right.
indicators, which are a form of financial market sentiment, largely positive to neutral, and then the sentiment indicators tied more to the economy, decidedly negative. And this is the question, right? Does one lead this time differently than it usually does? The economic side usually lags. It may be leading this time.
For the first time in my life, I read Jekyll and Hyde. I don't know who sent it to me, okay? But somebody I talked to said you ought to read this and send it to me. And it's amazing how you can have two personalities, beautifully written. You know, Robert Louis Stevenson wrote that book. But it really was challenging to me because it's like, wow, how many areas in my own life is there a Jekyll and Hyde thing going on where there's an inconsistency with maybe the outside world or even an inconsistency within myself? And what you're telling me right now, Dave, is maybe what we have is an inconsistency where the financial markets have a life of their own. Call it a day-night or a day-life or a night-life, whatever it is. And it's not matching the economic mood, what it actually takes to survive. Yeah, I think about debt, Dave. You know, we've been talking about equities and volatility and that type of thing, but when people are fearful, they demand more on what they loan. So the difference between U.S. treasuries, which supposedly are very safe, or like corporate bonds, a lot of times you'll have a pretty large spread there because the fear is that the corporation might default.
That's another measure of sentiment. It's like a thermometer, if you will.
Okay.
98.6, no big deal. 99.6, no big deal under certain conditions. 101, everyone's paying attention. It's a mild fever. 104, you should probably see a doctor. Mm-hmm. 105 or 106, you're probably in the ER. So the thermometer gives you a gauge for don't worry to, oh, definitely panic.
Right. And so yields right
high
now.
Yield, whether it's credit default swaps or high yield credit spreads, they're telling you that within the fixed income markets, within the debt markets. High yield credit spreads are more of a measure of institutional risk concerns. So we've
right.
talked about individual investors. We've talked about margin debt. We've talked about, you know, professional money managers. In this case, this is really just institutions that are concerned about high yield credit spreads. When the gap between treasuries and bond yields is wide, a spread, risk awareness is high and credit concerns are being priced in. You're going to pay for it.
Right.
Right. So again, it's temperatures are rising. When the gap between them is narrow, credit risk is not priced in. Concerns are low. So like VIX, credit spreads right now are suggestive of good times. Credit spreads are super narrow. No alarm bells.
This is like having a low volatility index and there's not much in the way of credit spreads.
Zero
this
concern.
This is smooth sailing, Dave.
It's smooth
what
sailing.
What are you worried about?
Issuance of high yield debt higher this year than last year by 21% year to date compared to last year, I think 256, almost 257 billion in issuance.
Right.
It's interesting. So maybe we should just say, hey, there's not going to be any issues at all. That's what the market is telling us.
Right. But the market also offers instruments that allow you to insure against a major change, right?
Right, and those would also suggest there's no concerns. I mean, this is flood
the
insurance.
Default swaps.
People are buying flood insurance in the middle of a drought.
Right.
They're getting it for free.
Okay.
Right, so credit default swaps, like an insurance policy on a bond default, pricing for CDS, credit default swaps, similar to credit spreads, indicative when and if institutional players are concerned about fixed income markets. So an investment grade CDS traded below 50 basis points last week, in line with the lows that we saw in 2020 and in line with the pre-COVID lows of 44 basis points, which marked the low going back to the global financial crisis. So again, that's pre-COVID, in between the global financial crisis and COVID, that cyclical trough, 44 bips. We were within a stone's throw of that last week. So no concerns marked in that market.
Right. Okay. So You have simplified for the listeners through the years one thing in particular, and that is the cost of money. Okay, I joke with you about reading long books about interest rates, but when you have available money, liquidity, it seems that you have this kind of smooth sailing, like in the financial markets. So right now, liquidity must be available, Dave.
Yeah, have a lot, costs a little. Have a little, costs a lot.
Yeah.
And there is a lot. How available is capital and at what price? These are considerations that sort of start in the financial sphere and can ultimately bleed into the economy. What we can say is that capital is very available at present. I mean, okay, I just mentioned the $256 billion in high-yield junk debt. Now, the contrast, of course, is that the cost of government debt is gradually rising. And frankly, the cost of capital is rising everywhere, just without credit risk differentiation. So, you know, the spreads are staying constant as everything gets pushed up.
Right.
But you're not getting a bump in government debt and a spike in investment grade or high yield or what have you. So the fact that no radical repricing has occurred, it's very helpful for the issuers.
Right.
And with it being helpful for the issuers, they're tapping the markets for hundreds of billions of dollars. Now, for creditors or for investors, it's perhaps the gradual boiling of the frog scenario versus the scalding water creating that volatile reaction. But there's nothing crazy happening in the debt markets today. What is a little crazy, I take that back. There's two crazy things. We'll get to it. What is a little crazy is that we're on track for record-breaking issuance of zero coupon convertible debt.
You mentioned that in the meeting. Why don't you explain again what a zero coupon bond is, basically?
Yeah, zeros are debt instruments that don't have an actual interest payment. It has an implied or sort of phantom payment attached to it. So you can buy that instrument at a discount and they're not paying you anything, but it matures at par. Or okay. It's supposed to mature at par.
So it's a type of interest, but you buy it at a discount.
Yeah.
And then the assumption is that it's going to mature at par or whatever they can pay, right?
Mature at par or convert to company equity.
Okay.
In the case of a zero coupon convertible, like they don't have to give you your money back. They can give you—
You can become a shareholder.
A payment in kind. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, think about a zero coupon convertible bond and try to imagine what it was like to be in Cyprus or Greece when your deposit was converted to a position in bank shares. And that was considered a disaster.
Right.
Because you had a debt instrument and you were getting income and then overnight you're an equity owner.
They named that bail-in. Remember that? It's the difference between a bailout. A bail-in is when everybody just becomes a shareholder.
They're not exactly the same, but there's enough similarities to realize that how someone is sold a product absolutely matters. And obviously, the zero coupon convertible debt is not being sold as a bail-in, but it sure feels like that's what it is in the end. Like, what are you going to get at the end of this?
Well, think about it. Okay, put yourself in the position of when you were a kid and you'd put a quarter in and they'd, you know, sell super balls or gumballs or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but what they're basically saying is if you don't get a gumball or a super ball, you get a portion of the share of the gumball machine. Now, granted, it's empty, but you get to be a shareholder
in the
of
machine.
The gumball right. machine. Yeah, so...
Well, so $186.8 billion in global issuance of zero coupon convertible bonds year to date. 60% of those bonds are related to AI, according to Axios. And last week, NVIDIA invested $3.5 billion in zero coupon bonds from a Taiwanese chipmaker. So again, it's NVIDIA is investing in lots of different things.
Right.
They've got a lot of capital to do that.
We heard that last week.
The sort of recycling, the incestuous nature of their capital spending is worth keeping in mind. But here it is. They have an appetite for zero coupon convertible bonds too. They want to own a piece of the action in Taiwanese chip makers.
So
who doesn't these days?
Let me just translate before we move to precious metals, because a lot of our listeners, they're wanting to know what your thought is there. But what I'm hearing in this show is that the financial markets have plenty of liquidity.
Yep.
Very little fear.
No.
Smooth sailing right now. And yet the person at home, okay, so I get home and my wife's like, you wouldn't believe what I spent at the store. And do we really have to fill the car up again? It's over $100 to fill the car up.
Yeah.
And we're blessed because I have an income. And yes, we can do that. But there's two Jekyll and Hyde going on right now at the same time. And what's interesting is that character lived perfectly fine with both of those in tandem for a period of time. And then that separation caught up with him.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, so the second crazy thing I was going to talk about, we've got bonds, precious metals. Those are two areas I want to wrap up with. We've said there's no drama playing out in the bond markets, except with government bonds. Hmm. And it is a global phenomenon where rates are increasing for sovereigns, taking out multi-decade highs. It's across Europe. It's across Asia. It's across the U.S. 10-year rates, 4.78 here in the U.S., 30-year debt, 5.25, which compares to the U.K. at 5.15 and 5.79 for their 30-year paper. That's now higher than during the Liz Truss bond panic in 2022. Now, note, there's not a panic in sovereign debt, but there is pressure in the sovereign debt markets.
Right.
And that pressure has already brought us to the point, sort of the maximum level of concern in the 2022 Liz Truss panic. Sentiment is fine.
Right.
Pricing has already shifted.
But the governments are having to pay a little bit more to borrow money.
Yeah. Or in some cases, a lot more. I mean, roll the clock back just a few years ago and the Japanese weren't paying anything.
Do you remember those days, Dave? Negative interest rates. We had several years of shows where we were scratching our heads going, how does this work?
And then not just in Japan.
Yeah.
So 2.88 for the 10-year in Japan, 3.94 up from zero just a few years ago. Germany's at 3.36 and 3.82, 3.82% on their 30-year paper.
Hmm.
So fiscal pressures are growing, which is also a global phenomenon. So I'm not just picking on the U.S. We have our own issues, but they're just not unique anymore. More money is spent on debt service than defense in the U.K., in France, in the U.S.
As of last year.
And at least a dozen other OECD countries. These are your developed world rich countries. At least a dozen plus those. So we're talking 12 to 15 companies that are paying more in interest than on defense.
Countries, not companies, right?
Countries.
Yeah.
Did I say companies?
You said companies, but that's okay.
I meant countries. Thank you.
Because it fits in, Dave, because NVIDIA is also doing the same type of thing. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the OECD countries are this year going to borrow an additional $18 trillion between them.
Wow.
So, like, bad habits die hard.
Yeah.
And they're not even trying to curb a bad habit. $18 trillion between the OECD countries, that's new debt for this year, according to the Financial Times, combined interest expense over $2 trillion. And that's for the first time ever, over $2 trillion in aggregate for those OECD countries. Of course, the U.S. stands out with $1.25 trillion of that already paid year to date. The UK is spending 1 in 10 pounds of tax revenue on interest. We're spending 1 in 5.
And you know what? We'd be spending more than that if we weren't buying our own bonds.
So think about this. Trump is like, we should have lower rates. Our house is totally in order.
It's not patriotic if you raise rates.
The UK is paying higher rates than we are, and yet they're spending 10% of their revenue.
And we're 20.
And we're close to 20.
Yeah.
So whose house is in order? Like, let's not kid ourselves.
Right. But Bessent has been buying back our treasuries.
Last week.
Okay. To keep that interest rate looking good.
Last week, $12.5 billion U.S. debt. Talk about circular financing. It's a little bit different than NVIDIA, but it's still just gamesmanship and shell games.
Right.
Buying down the rate, short end of the curve. Not sure why he's doing that. 2026 to 2028 maturities. We noted last year that Mike Wilson was bearish on debt. This is the CIO at Morgan Stanley.
Right.
And he recommended replacing half of your fixed income allocation in a model portfolio with gold. He sees, as we do, that there's considerable ongoing impairment in the bond market. I guess what I'm trying to illustrate is that it's starting with the sovereign debt markets. That doesn't mean it can't migrate elsewhere, but today at least it's contained and there are no indications in those financial market indicators suggesting that it's migrating yet.
Do you remember a few years ago, Dave? So you're talking about Morgan Stanley replacing it with gold. One of the things that strikes me right now is how many people are bringing their gold home. You remember a few years ago when Germany said, hey, we would like 1/5 of our gold sent from the United States to Germany. And the initial reaction from the U.S. was, well, yeah, we'll be happy to do that over the next 7 years.
It was interesting. It was what's the delay?
Why?
Just order up a truck, a plane, a boat. This
Unless,
is not a big
have you
deal.
Been leasing it out to somebody else? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. But other people
because the
doing
logistics
that
are pretty easy. Moving products pretty easy.
We saw that earlier this year when they loaded 747s up with silver.
Right.
Yeah.
So I know it's a news cycle coincidence, but both headlines are indicative of a different kind of sentiment shift. Hmm. You've got the Dutch central bank repatriating $12 billion in gold from U.S. and Canadian vaults.
So they're doing the same thing that the Germans did.
Same thing.
Bring it back.
They want it closer to home. London's good enough. And they're citing geopolitical concerns. Okay. Well, I mean, I think that's a diplomatic way of saying we're losing trust and confidence with the U.S., the U.S. Treasury, U.S. foreign policy, U.S. foreign policy overreach, and we feel better working with the Brits, and we feel better having it closer at hand. And the U.S., not only in its confiscation of assets from Russia in 2022, is now running sort of a reputation of overreach. And this is a European Union player. This is a different lens through which you could look at sentiment. Mm-hmm. There is a shift there. Like, we don't really trust you guys. We're not going to say that. We're going to say it's geopolitical risk that is a concern.
Well, we're not
for
talking
us.
Man in the street right now. What we're talking about are the decision makers at the very top.
Yeah. And then last week came the announcement of the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund cutting fixed income allocations to sovereign debt from 70% to 50% in their bond portfolio.
So they're concerned about sovereign debt as well.
They're concerned about sovereign debt, not necessarily U.S. debt in general, but sovereign debt in particular. And so, you know, there will be some recycling into corporate credit, into mortgage-backed securities, into other things.
Yeah, but how much does that affect treasuries? Because Japan has been also reducing their treasury holdings.
This is just from, because you're talking about a $2.3 trillion sovereign wealth fund. This is a reduction in U.S. treasuries by $80 billion.
Wow. That's significant.
So it is significant.
Yeah.
That's $80 billion in liquidations of U.S. treasuries out of the total of $106 billion, and that sort of captures all of their sovereign debt exposure as they reduce it from a 70% allocation within the fixed income bond index to 50%. $2.3 trillion in assets. They're not moving from fixed income to gold, so this is not a replay of like a Mike Wilson thing. It's fixed income to fixed income. They're just looking for a little bit more yield.
But that means Bessent's probably going to have to come in and buy some of that too. It's not like we have people lined up at the door to buy treasuries right now.
No, I think the Norwegians move out of government paper. It's an important signpost.
Right. So the Netherlands are bringing their gold home. The Norwegians, which sometimes we get
are
confused.
Are saying you can have your paper back.
Yeah, you can have your paper back. Ah, wow.
This week, assuming a stronger CPI print, Warsh would then have permission to raise rates 25 basis points. An initial negative reaction to the gold market, I think that'd be normal.
Yeah.
Consider where gold is likely to be over the next 1 to 2 year time frame. I kind of hope that gold takes a hit this week. We're on a path to 8 to 10,000 an ounce. That is a path that's easier to imagine by the day when you look at the pressures in the global government bond market.
Right.
And so I would recommend using any weakness prior to 2027 as an opportunity to add ounces as often as you can and as often as you get a break in price. So while the markets are enamored today with risk assets, there is going to come a day when risk indicators, instead of where they're at today, like we discussed earlier, they will be sounding an alarm. And the day that the risk indicators, which today are flat and saying nothing, is of concern on the horizon. Nothing to worry about here. Move along. Have fun speculating. When those alarm bells are going off, the gold available for purchase is going to be very limited. And that's the context where you have soaring prices, reflective of a demand wave we haven't seen from the investing public in more than a generation.
Right. Even the rise that we've had so far has been non-public participatory.
Central bank driven. By the way, World Gold Council numbers on central bank gold consumption continue to be strong. The most recent monthly totals out of China, 20 tons for the month. That's their 21st consecutive month of purchases. There's people who get it and people who don't.
Right.
And as we talk today about sentiment indicators, maybe the folks who are super positive about where AI is going, super positive about, you know, credit concerns, maybe they're onto something. If they're not, again, this is where you've got so many people loaded on one side of the boat. When they decide to move in mass, it's going to get very interesting.
Better buy gold.
I hope you own what you need long before that day arrives.
You've been listening to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney. You can find us at McIlvaney.com, McIlvaney.com. And you can call us at 800-525-9556.
This has been the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. The views expressed should not be considered to be a solicitation or a recommendation for your investment portfolio. You should consult a professional financial advisor to assess your suitability for risk and investment. Join us again next week for a new edition of the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary.